from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about the Shenyun Chinese music and dance performance coming to Clues.
I'll get a preview of River City, a world premiere at the Phoenix Theater.
And I'll take a look at what the Cabaret is bringing to town in 2015. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Based out of New York, the Shenyun Company tours the world with their telling of myths and legends from China's 5,000-year history through classical Chinese music and dance, but they're not allowed to perform in China. Travis DiNicola met with Dr. Siming Homer, who is involved with bringing the Shenyun to Indianapolis to perform at Clues Memorial Hall on January 16th and 17th.
Dr. Homer, welcome back to Art of the Matter. It's great to see you.
Thank you.
And Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. So this is a pretty exciting performance. The Shenyun company that comes here, it's been here a number of years in a row, but every year it brings so much excitement. I know people get really thrilled to see it. For those of us who have not seen it before, help me understand what this is. It's a big evening of classical Chinese dance and music telling different stories and myths of Chinese culture and history. Is that right?
Yes. Shenyun is a company, a unique music and dance company based in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they travel every year all over the world. It's not just Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And they're coming here because we are the one paved the road, because we believe Indianapolis folks deserve to see a show of this caliber. That's why we do it. Their mission is to revive 5,000 years of Chinese traditional culture.
Mm-hmm.
And they use forms of classic Chinese dance to showcase.
And there's also wonderful costumes and sets. And it's quite a big production, correct?
Yes, it's a grand production. They have 40 musicians and 60 dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And the show includes backdrop. It's animated backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have an orchestra, which is 40 musician combined. Its base is like European orchestra, but on top of that, they added a Chinese soloist to lead the melody. Shenyun music is a bridge between the East and the West. They are the only one able to perfectly blend East and West music together.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of orchestra try. They are not able to do that. And it will transform you and to a different place. It's that moving.
Now, is it a series of different stories, or is it sort of one continuous work? Or how does the evening progress?
It's they use the form of classic Chinese dance to portray the story. Actually, classic Chinese dance is very good with expressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Its expressiveness is perfect for telling stories. So that's how they able to portray the historic figures, modern-day tales, and also stories from literary works.
So it's a mixture of many different stories.
Yes.
And I've heard the dance is very athletic, very acrobatic, quite beautiful, too.
Yes, because classic Chinese dance, they have three components.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is form. It's the physical form, makes the movements of the dance. As a matter of fact, in ancient times, classic dance is coming from martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese believes it's the flip side of a coin. The gentle side is wu, the warlike side is martial art.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the first component. Second component is the techniques, including challenging flips and tumbling techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And these have thousands of years of history. Only until now, recently, it's adopted by other art forms, such as acrobatics and gymnastics.
Okay.
The third component is called the yun. Yun is actually the most important part of classic Chinese dance. It's the component that the dancer portray through their movements to bring audience the message. And that's why it's so expressive and able to use to tell stories, basically.
Now, is there any dialogue in this, or is it all told through just dance and music?
Mainly is through language of dance. People able to get the stories. As, for example, storytelling. The one I remembered is Journey to the West. It's a classic Chinese novel, and it's very, very important. I used Homer's Odyssey as comparison. And just like Homer's Odyssey, there's a lot of episodes in the main novel. And Sun Yun is able to bring to the audience four seasons, I think four, in the last four seasons, four stories on stage, and all through the dance, not use the language, but through the dance, and people can understand the story very well.
That sounds excellent. Now, is there a translation for what Shen Yun means, or how would you translate it?
Yeah, Shen Yun means divine being dancing. That's mainly the translation is the divine beings dancing.
Okay.
And Shen Yun, besides classic Chinese dance, they also have ethnic dances. I don't know if a lot of people understand. China is home to over 50 ethnic groups. By bringing these on stage, it helps to dispel the myths of homogenous China and celebrate China's diversities.
Yes, of course. Now, am I correct that though this is performed around the world, it's not performed in China?
That's a very good question. That's the reason comes around when people call Sun Yun is the Renaissance of the East. Because what they revive is the traditional Chinese culture, which lasted for 5,000 years. And it was interrupted, and that's where the Renaissance come from. Where was it interrupted? In 1949, when the communists seized the power, that's when they started to dismantle this magnificent culture step by step, because deep down is about faith. That's what all traditional Chinese culture is all about.
And so in many ways, I mean, these performances are a way not just of sharing Chinese culture with other people, but preserving Chinese culture.
Precisely. We're very confident and very comforted to know that traditional Chinese culture is revived outside China.
Now, tell me a little bit more about your role locally in helping to bring this here each year.
Initially, I went to see the show in other big cities, and we were so impressed by it. And I talked to the group, why can't they come too locally? And to be frankly, because this is a big production, they can't have so many people to do the marketing. So they rely on the local people to pave the road. So I said, count me in. And that's what started. And it's the seventh season now. They come to this city. And I think it's being recognized worldwide, even by our local community, particularly the arts community. I have been working with a lot of organizations in town because they recognize the value and they want to be part of it.
Well, certainly over the years, I've seen a lot of great marketing, whether it be, you know, full page ads in the newspaper or banners around town or different flyers and such. So it certainly seems as though, you know, the word is getting out there and at least people, you know, are beginning to really recognize it each year that this great performance comes here, whether they've seen it or not. There's that name recognition. This year, it's great that it's going to be at Clues Memorial Hall again. And it is on a weekend, which certainly makes it easier for a lot of people to come see it.
Yes.
So now, are there any other related outreach activities or anything else going on in connection with this? Or, I mean, this is pretty much a one-time thing.
They actually comes each year. One year each year, they have new, brand new productions, and because we have 5,000 years of
so, if you've seen this before, it's going to be different this year.
Yes, it's going to be totally different. So we don't repeat the stories, but But the audience review is probably the best. Everyone come out, feel uplifted, inspired. So we feel it's well worth the effort to do that.
What's your favorite part of it? What are you looking forward the most to see?
It's always those stories mm-hmm. that moves people and moves me as well. I'm looking forward to see the show myself.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a fantastic show, and I hope people get a chance to get out and see it. It'll be a great event to go to during this cold winter, and something very exciting that you're helping to bring to Indianapolis. Thank you very much for your work on that.
Thank you.
And thanks for being on Art of the Matter. Great to see you again, Dr. Hummer.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Dr. Siming Hummer. You can see the Shen Yun Chinese music and dance performances at Clues Memorial Hall on January 16th and 17th. More information is available at shenyun, that's shenyun.com/Indianapolis. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Diana Grisanti's new play, River City, is receiving its world premiere this month at the Phoenix Theater. This family story tackles questions about finding yourself and your path when you identify with more than one culture. Sharon Gamble invited Dale McFadden, the play's director, and Ben Rose, the theater's marketing and media relations director, in to talk about River City.
So Dale and Ben, for just full disclosure here, I have read this script, so that if you're like, why is she asking that question, that's probably where it comes from.
Good.
But so River City... tell us a little bit about, Ben, I'm going to direct this to you. What was the source of the Phoenix Theater becoming aware of this project or this script?
Well, it came to us through the National New Play Network, and Diane Grisanti is the writer. And so we'd actually sent some representatives down to North Carolina and heard and seen the play and liked mm-hmm. it. And thought it would be a good fit for our season. We always try and include some type of, social justice or cultural type piece into our lineup. And mm-hmm. this was one that fit very nicely. So that's how we initially came in contact with it.
Remind us what the National New Play Network is and does.
The National New Play Network is a group of 30 to 40 theaters across the nation that are similar in size, not the huge giant playhouses, but some size of Phoenix and a little bit bigger and similar budgets. And we all kind of band together and we'll agree through the play network to produce certain plays as a unit. So this particular play will be produced, I think, three times throughout our different network in this season across the nation. So it's a way to kind of increase the visibility for playwrights and get them produced in more than one area of the country.
I understand lots of times the playwright will come to see each of the productions. Do you know yet whether Ms. Grisanti is going to get to see?
I am pretty sure she's been up for to hear some of our rehearsals, and I'm fairly certain she's going to be there the opening weekend. Dale may have some more information on that, but most often they do come and visit and check out a performance.
Yeah, I believe Diana had been at our first reading of the play, and prior to that, Brian Fonseca, artistic director at the Phoenix, and I had a conversation with her after the first production of this, and we said, do you want to do any rewrites? Here are questions we've got. And so she has, of course, as the playwright, a very good handle on what she wants to change. She's had rewrites, and that's helped us immensely in rehearsal. They're not great rewrites, meaning a great quantity, mm-hmm. but they're enough to focus further on what she wants in terms of particular scenes.
Dale, I know you've had in a really significant career of directing plays from people of many eras, but it strikes me that it might be kind of a treat to get to work with a living playwright who's living but not so famous that she's inaccessible.
Oh, absolutely, because she has a great handle on what she wants to do. And she knows these characters. She knows the events from 1968 that she wants to focus on. But she's written a real human story about a woman looking for her identity after her parents have divorced, after she has very few clues about her own identity with a black father and a white mother, and the journey she goes on. It may not be one that we all have, but the great identification with how did I get to be who I am? And if I can't find the answers to that, I've got to make the search. And she does. And it's a great play, a great story for people to see. We still have a lot of questions about who we are, even when we think we know ourselves. Hmm. And that's the journey that the character Mary takes.
Why is it called River City?
Well, River City is Louisville. And that's where the title comes from. And that was what Diana said would be the title for it. And also events that occur so much are connected to the city and the characters there. And Mary, the main character, has a conflict about whether she should be living in Chicago with her new husband and their trendy life, or she should be going back to where she was born to find who she is.
It's intriguing to me, too, that it's not just a cultural history about skin color that's at stake here, but, you know, people who live in Indianapolis often joke about, well, you know, U.S. 40 is the Mason-Dixon line. South of that, you're in the South. But really, if you're in Louisville, you're in the South. The Ohio
Absolutely.
River is very much a dividing line. Mm-hmm. So she's also got this choice. Does, you know, is she a Northerner now?
And there are some Indiana jokes in the play, which are good. And basically, it is the desire that the state did not exist because then Chicago and Louisville would be closer.
Well, thankfully, that is not going to happen.
No, it's not. But, yes, there is that dramatic change. I know when I go to Louisville, you get across the bridge, people sound different, people dress different. To me, especially in the spring, you see people more dressed up than we are here, and the architecture, et cetera, and you are there. You are there.
And you're in Louisville.
Correct.
Yes.
Sorry, I had to work on that.
That's wrong. Yes, I've given that up. So I just say it the way I say it, which means they know I'm not from there.
So the Phoenix has a long history of putting voices on stage that are not always represented on stage. And Mary is not the only person with two different cultural heritages, right? Her husband has?
Yes, Javier Cintron, who grew up in a Chicago suburb, but is Mexican and is a rising chef in the city, also has issues with how people treat him because of who they think he is and who he actually is. And there's tension between him and his wife as far as how much he is truly still Mexican or Hispanic and how assimilated he is. And it's very surprising, I think, in the second act, that some of the issues Mary deals with are reflected in her almost turning on Javier and saying, you don't have it as rough as I do. And those are really frank, involving scenes where both of them are dealing with how others treat them in a white society and how they're able to get through that and endure it.
And there might be another generation on the way in this marriage, so then there's mm-hmm. yet another new melting pot of cultures.
That's right. We have the third character, which is that she is pregnant. We also have the third character in Whitney's life, who's the father of Mary's father. And that character is Whitney's father, who lives upstairs. So we have two prominent characters, one not born and the other in the present scenes, now deceased, and especially the father. And Diana's done some rewriting in those scenes. The father is quite a presence, I think, in the play.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really the interesting point for me is when children come into the picture. We have all these different, you know, socioeconomic issues and racial issues, but they really come to a head when someone's bringing a child into the world. And that's what we're dealing with in the play is they, as a couple, have never had to confront how are we going to raise our child, what are we going to call them or tell them their ethnicity is. And then when she's searching for her past, we get to see a glimpse of how her father had to deal with the same issue when kids come in and people don't know what to do because the kids don't necessarily come with a guidebook for what they should be clinging to. They look to us for the guidance. And when you have these racial divides that exist, people have a hard time trying to figure out, well, what do we do? And they get caught in the middle. And that's where a lot of the dramatic scene work comes in.
There's some kind of philosophical talk about, do we or do we not live in a quote unquote post-racial society, whatever that is.
Which comes up in the play, and Mary uses that exact term and says basically, no, we don't.
What would it look like if we did? I mean...
Well, it's very hard to answer because she's saying as an individual, and that at the end of the day, that's all we can have. She says that that is bogus and that people don't know what it means, and she doesn't know what it means. The issues in the play always come back to individuals, meaning characters. And the argument is that American drama does family situations best, whether it's a traditional family, extended family, other kinds of relationships. And there's no doubt in this play that at the end of the day, people are dealing with their family, meaning individuals they can run from, but they cannot hide from. And we know what that is, and we see in the last scene the meeting of Whitney and the granddaughter he didn't know he had, Mary. And there is hope that some sharing of stories and love will occur that will help her find her identity. It's very moving.
I think it's important to mention that it's not a terribly heavy play. There's laughter, you know, there is love, there is caring. Of course, there are these moments that are difficult, but it's a very human play. It is have a lot of hope. It's not like, oh, we're going to go and watch a lot of drama about racial issues.
A gloomy journey.
Yeah, it's something I think everyone can relate to, whether you've been through her specific process or not. Everybody's had an aunt or uncle that all of a sudden popped up in the family that nobody knew about, and somebody had to seek that out. So, if you enjoy genealogy and, looking into your own histories, this is a very interesting play for you to come and see.
Yeah, Ben, I was going to ask, because this is the season of comedies, how
right.
this fit in with the whole season here.
Right. Yeah, I suppose that this is, after coming off of Old Jews Telling Jokes and the Christmas, show, this is a very different direction. And we thought about that in the lineup. We thought, well, we're doing all these comedies, but there is lines of humor. They're not the direct, punchline type stuff, but it's more the type of humor that erupts out of people's day-to-day lives. And what our greatest pains are often vocalized through our comedy. And so we see these bits of humor and the playing back and forth between the characters that, help to soften some of the harsh realities that they're dealing with. So, I wouldn't say it's a laugh out loud comedy straight through like a Seinfeld episode, but it's definitely pleasurable from that standpoint.
But also, when a straight dramatic play is done well, people in the audience don't leave complaining that they didn't see a comedy. They're involved. They're moved. And we're still in a theater culture where we make too many apologies for not doing comedies all the time. People will be moved by this. They'll be involved. And whatever time of year it is, this is the decision to do this very good play.
Why is this something you wanted to direct?
Because to see a main character able to say, I have not gotten from my family what I should have been given as far as an identity, and I don't know who is left as a surviving spouse, relative, where to go, I found that to be very powerful and moving. And that's where I'm coming from.
Sharon Gamble with director Dale McFadden and Phoenix Theater Marketing and Media Relations Director and cast member Ben Rose. Diana Grisanti's River City plays at the Phoenix Theater through February 1st. In conjunction with the production, the theater will hold a free conversation called Checking the Other Box at the Central Library this Saturday, January 10th at 2 p.m. You can learn more at phoenixtheater.org. Again, phoenixtheater.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
It's like, give or take, a week into the new year. How are you doing on your resolutions?
Well,
did you make resolutions?
I did. But, you know, I decided to give myself a 2-week buffer this year.
Good for you.
Yeah, because then it's like, you know, you get done with New Year's Eve and it's a great celebration. Uh-huh. And then New Year's Day, it's like, oh, his drink is like, oh, now I got to start, like, you know, acting
being
like
serious.
An adult.
Yeah.
And, you know, or whatever it may be. And so I said, no, you know what? I'm giving myself a 2-week buffer this year.
That
to prepare.
Is so
what do you think?
Smart.
I'll let you know how it goes after
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I was having this conversation on New Year's Eve at a party with some friends who were hemming and hawing about resolutions. And I said, well, if you make a positive resolution, mm-hmm. something like hear more live jazz.
Oh, yes. That's very good.
That was actually one mm-hmm. of my resolutions a couple of years ago. And I'm
right.
happy to say that I held to it. It was mm-hmm. not hard to do at all. And in fact, if you're still thinking, oh, I need to make some resolutions, we have some suggestions for you in the form of go consume more local art.
Exactly. Listen to more live jazz, go to more live local theater, hear more classical music,
maybe
whatever it may be.
Maybe take a class, learn to paint.
There you go.
Go
see some dance.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I bet we could come up with some great ideas.
Is it time for our calendar called
What do we do?
I think it is. Whoa.
Yeah.
Astute listeners will be like, go ahead. We're waiting for
we're
you.
Waiting.
So
what
we
are you going to say it?
You.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to kick off with, you know, I think if you don't have enough magic in your life, well.
And who does?
And who really does? Now is the perfect time because, and I'll be talking about this in the next couple of weeks with some great interviews with a lot of magicians from around the world and locally as well. But the Indianapolis Winter Magic Festival is taking place at the same time that The Illusionist, which is the touring Broadway show, is coming to the Marat. And so they have a lot of magic going on. Basically, the week of from the 20th to the 25th of January. Illusionists are here on the 20th to the 25th at the Marat, and then the Indianapolis Winter Magic Festival takes place the 22nd through the 25th. And just to make this even more fun, to kick it all off, Sun King Brewery is creating Alakazam, which is a special magic beer.
That they challenge you to make disappear.
Exactly. There you go. There's lots of great information. There's actually packages where you can get tickets for both the Illusionists and the Winter Magic Festival together. Check out Indie Fringe's website for more information about all that.
I love that. And I also love that in a digital age, magic, well, it can't really be done digitally.
You know, I mean, you can see some fun stuff on TV or on video, but, you know, when it comes down to it, it's a physical art that must be seen live to be truly appreciated.
To be consumed in
it doesn't really
dimensions.
Work any other way, you know, well, maybe on radio, but then no
well,
one can
yeah.
see it.
Hey, you might have, at the end of summer, might have been among those three sold out audiences to hear the band Matthew Street reenacting the same 12 song set that the Beatles performed in September of 1964 at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. And you, or you might have been somebody trying to get a ticket for that and weren't able to. Well, you are in luck because at the Lakin Auditorium at the JCC, that's 6701 Hoover Road, this Saturday night, you'll have another opportunity to enjoy the Matthew Street Band. They're going to do that covers of that 12-song set the Beatles did in 1964 at the fairgrounds, plus some new pieces. And this is actually a benefit for the JCC. The JCC is turning 100 this year in Indianapolis, and instead of doing a single benefit performance, they're doing a whole series of events. So this is one of those. Tickets are available at jccindy.org, and very affordable tickets. Great cause. Go to jccindy.org if you're looking to rock out this Saturday night.
That sounds great. Hey, well, Sharon, you mentioned going to see more jazz.
Yes.
So,
what do you have?
Well, you know, we do have a club in town that's been voted one of the world's top 100 jazz clubs in the world by Downbeat Magazine. And
that would be the Jazz Kitchen.
That's right. And Friday night, so if you're listening to us Saturday morning, sorry, but there's great shows still all weekend long at the Jazz Kitchen you can check out. But Friday night, one of my favorite jazz musicians in town, Bill Langton, an amazing jazz guitarist, is doing a Santana tribute.
Ooh.
Yeah. Two shows, 7:30 and 9:30 p.m. That should be awesome. You can get dinner as
well, or drinks with that. But Bill Langton's going to be joined by some great musicians, including Jesse Whitman on bass, and they're going to be playing Carlos Santana music, as well as Tito Puente and Dizzy Gillespie, and all types of really fun Latin jazz. It is going to be a great night at Jazz Kitchen Friday night.
That is so cool. I usually associate Bill Langton with more laid-back, gentle stuff.
Though. Yeah, I can't wait to see him rock out like that.
Mm-hmm. Way cool fun. Hey, you'll hear more about this actually next week or in a couple of weeks here on The Art of the Matter. But Footlight Musicals right now is doing one of its more intimate musicals where the audience is seated on stage. You're actually kind of a part of the show. They're doing a musical, a two-person story called The Story of My Life. The Journey Begins with One True Friend is the tagline. Music and lyrics by Neil Bartram and book by Brian Hill. It stars Graham Brinklow and Tim Spradlin as two guys, Thomas and Alvin. They meet in the first grade, but they're friends for 40 years. They're kind of it's kind of a bromance like in the movies. They face school, distance, career, girls, tradition, and even death together. So kind of contemplative, but ultimately a lovely, beautiful friendship that's called The Story of My Life. It's at Footlight Musicals now through the 25th. More information at Footlight, FOOTLITE.org.
Very cool. Hey, a lot of great stuff coming up at the IMA over the next couple weeks to kick off the year. One of them I'm really looking forward to is Erwin Worm. And I know that sounds like a strange name, but his name is Erwin Worm, and his last name is spelled W-U-R-M. And he is this internationally known Austrian artist, kind of a cross between sculpture and conceptual art. If you know the Red Hot Chili Peppers video Can't Stop, that was actually a collaboration with Worm using a lot of his sort of art and sculptures. What he does is these things called one-minute sculptures, where essentially he leaves materials behind with instructions for people to make a sculpture themselves with their body, sort of maybe leaning against a wall or holding something, or two people holding something between them. And we don't know exactly what he's going to be bringing here, but he is going to be bringing his one-minute sculptures to the Ephraimson Family Entrance Pavilion beginning January 16th. And what's also really cool about this is that Trisha Pock, who is our new contemporary curator, this is her first artist that she's bringing in, and I think we should go and support her. And it should be really cool. The IMA is also hosting a conversation with Worm and Pock at 6:30 in the Toby on the 15th before the public opening, and you do need to RSVP for that. You can call the IMA for that. And then there's going to be some really cool other events going on at the IMA, all connected to Erwin Worm.
Well, I have something on the IMA beat as well. I'm going to throw it out there for your consideration now because I think it's going to fill up. It's ArtX Fit, Action in Art. Ooh. What it is a series of evening classes, 2 hours each evening from on Thursdays, February 5, 12, 19, and 26. In other words, every Thursday in February. You meet in the pop-up park, and it is... It's basically a change of pace from traditional art lectures. It's an interactive immersion course in art. It blends hands-on lecture components in inventive and unexpected ways with some experimentation. No prior knowledge or experience is necessary. So if your resolution was learn more about art, this might be a great way to do so. Again, that's not coming up till February, but you probably want to plot out your schedule
and
now.
And that pop-up park, it's a new space actually created by Scott Stulen in the cafe. And it's like an outdoor park except inside, which is really kind of funky.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I got one IMA thing too still, and that's for Martin Luther King Day. They are having their celebration, Speaking of Love, on Sunday, January 18th from 2 to 5. It's free throughout the museum, and there's going to be writers and poets and singers and artists and all different types of people doing different creative things to remember Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And so that's going to be a really neat day as well. Okay, something not IMA.
Something
ready?
Not IMA, yeah. If you have high school kids in your life who are interested in acting in musical theater, listen up. Civic Theater Young Adult Program, which is for high school kids, will be having a workshop focusing on musical theater led by Ron Morgan, an experienced Broadway performer, guest director, and choreographer. And he's going to teach some of the Western dance styles that will be used in this year's young adult production, Oklahoma. Where the Wind Comes Streaming on the Plain. You can learn square dancing as part of this, and it's an opportunity for students interested in theater-style dance, but it'll be helpful for any kids in your life, high school kids in your life, who are hoping to audition for Oklahoma. Auditions will be this spring. The workshop will be held on Sunday, January 25th from 2 to 4. Sunday, January 25th, 2 to 4. Find out more at Civic Theater's website.
Very cool. Hey, you know, Sharon, one resolution I actually did make this year is to spend more time at the Garfield Park Conservatory, because I love that space. And, you know, I went down there for the trains, of course, the crossing. But I just love walking through the conservatory, and it's so beautiful. And they have so many cool events that are going on throughout the next month. And a lot of them are free. Some there's a small admission fee, but they have a guided conservatory tour on both January 10th and the 24th. Those are Saturdays at 2:30, which is very cool. They also have Family Fish Day. It's your chance to feed the fish, because there's a lot of great big fish there, and that sounds pretty fun. And kids can do that. That's from 1:30 to 2:30 on the 24th. They also have, my goodness, early morning meditation. That's going to take place on Saturday, February 7th. And you can do in-house hot yoga in the gardens, which is pretty cool. And there are lots of other neat events. If you go down there and check out their calendar, or you go online and get their information, if you search for Garfield Park under IndyGov or Indy Parks, you can get the whole thing. But there's a lot of cool different events that are going on at Garfield Park every weekend.
And in a couple of weeks, you're going to hear more about an upcoming photo exhibit with historic photos of Garfield Park.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds very,
very
cool. Fun.
Yeah, beautiful park.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're thinking, well, feeding fish sounds great, but I'd like to do something that where I don't have to expend quite as much energy, Butler University has a great faculty artist series, and next week on the 13th at 7:30, there'll be a free concert by pianist Kate Boyd at the Ideson Duckwall Recital Hall. It's a solo recital, works by Schubert, Chopin, Berg, and Prokofiev. So lots of intriguing repertoire, some more commonly heard and some not so commonly heard. So that's coming up again next week on the 13th at 7:30, free faculty recital at Butler in the Ideson Duckwall Recital Hall, which has terrific acoustics, great place to hear solo piano.
And last thing I've got, Sharon, is at the IRT, Good People. And that is the play that is running right now at the IRT on their One America main stage. It's about a single mother and her survival dealing with unemployment and dealing with some things financially, and high school flame and all sorts of other stuff. And it's going to be some great performances you will see from Constance Macy and Nick Abiel. And check that out, Good People at the IRT.
And my last item, since we talked a little bit about classes, is Ellen Robinson, who is a creative coach, is offering a visual art class. It's called Heart Play, H-E-A-R-T, Play, Painting What's in Your Heart. It's called an intuitive painting class led by Ellen Robinson at her studio called Inspire Studio, which is at 6503 Ferguson Street in Broad Ripple. And you can learn a little bit more by just Googling Ellen Robinson Heart Play. Those classes start on Tuesday, January 13th and run into mid-February, so do that soon.
Awesome. Sharon, we'll be back next week with more on that calendar that we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
The Cabaret at the Columbia Club has much planned for 2015. Travis DiNicola sat down with director Shannon Forsell to find out more.
Shannon, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Great to have you here, and a great way to kick off 2015 with you here chatting about Cabaret at the Columbia Club, and your 2015 season, which is filled with some amazing performers that I can't wait to hear about. Real quick, give me the, for people who are not familiar with the cabaret and have put it on their New Year's list of things to do this year, what is it?
Great. Okay, well, I'm going to really take it down to its essence for people who don't know about cabaret. Cabaret is really kind of a mixture between a nightclub experience and a theatrical experience. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing something that is to be seen, not you don't talk during the show, but you're in a setting that's a swanky night out with martinis and food.
Yeah.
And you sit at tables and chairs, and it's very cozy and intimate.
Swanky is key, and it is lovely because you guys, your performance space is in the Columbia Club, it's such a great space. And even though the Columbia Club is the Columbia Club, the performances are, of course, open to the public.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That can be confusing for folks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of our shows are open to the public.
Yep.
And so you kind of get to sneak into the Columbia Club for those nights.
Yeah, which is very fun.
Yeah.
That's a great, elegant place to be anyway.
Absolutely.
And stuff. And you just go up to, what is it, the
third floor. Overlooking Monument Circle.
Mm-hmm. Great room and great space, and you can get drinks and food and all that stuff, as you said, and have a lovely, intimate evening with some great performers, including, what do we got this year?
Oh, my gosh. Well,
you've got some big ones.
We're kicking off this season because we run all year long. We're mm-hmm. a calendar year, so we're every month. So we're kicking off on January 24th with two-time Tony winner, six-time Tony nominee, powerhouse Sutton Foster.
Sutton Foster.
Sutton Foster. So
this is a big name.
This is a big name. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, she was at the Palladium, and so we didn't know if folks would want to see her. And what we discovered is, so many folks want to see her up close.
Sure.
And so her tickets to her first two performances sold out so quickly, within like 10 minutes. So we added a performance on Sunday evening at 7 p.m., which is Sunday the 25th.
Okay.
And so she's kicking off the season. So we've got some Broadway stars and some jazz. We have a really fun and funky group coming.
Well, hold on for a second there.
Let's
go back. So you said sold out because, I mean, the Palladium's a little bit bigger than the cabaret.
It is.
and just to give people a sense of like how up close this is. I mean,
right.
The space, like how many people usually seat mm-hmm. for a concert?
We only seat 150.
Yeah.
So you are,
I mean, you
within
are really
feet
like right
of the performer.
Up there. And,
right.
And there's, you know, I mean, you can pretty much, you know, they walk by you as they're going up to the stage. And
they do. They walk by you. They'll talk to you after the performances. They're out and they meet the audience. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get to meet them. They most of them have CDs, and then they autograph the CDs so you can purchase those. So you really get a chance to get to know the performer as a person, not just someone on a big stage far away.
It's very, very cool.
And it's pretty powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. It really is a fun experience. And again, a great thing to do in the new year if you haven't already yet, make that resolution happen. Okay. So after Sutton Foster.
Okay. So on February 7th, we have a fun and funky group that is they were an up-and-coming group, but now they're really becoming extremely popular.
Mm-hmm.
They're the Hot Sardines.
Great name.
And they were named by Forbes magazine as the number one jazz band in New York City.
Wow.
And this is, they're kicking off their world tour.
Okay.
And to go with their new debut album, mm-hmm. also called the Hot Sardines. And these folks, I mean, the best way that I can describe them is Prohibition-era music on speed. So they bring this Parisian cafe kind of music and Prohibition era music and kind of a speakeasy feel into this century. They're young and they're hip, and they even have, they're a 9-piece group, so it's a bigger group than we often have at the cabaret.
Okay. Yeah, that is good.
And they even have their own hip Eddie the tap dancer. That's a part of the show, yeah.
Now, I'm guessing vocals are in this band, too.
Yeah, there are vocals in this group, mm-hmm. and they perform, they've sold out like 12 to 15 shows in New York's famed Joe's Pub,
mm-hmm.
which is a very hip place. They've played at Lincoln Center, and a lot of times in the places where they play, they dance on the bar and do really fun things.
Now, a lot of jazz from the time period features guitars, which is something we don't always see in jazz bands, today. Do you know, is there... I mean, like sort of that hot guitar,
yes,
French sound.
Yes, yeah. It has a, you know, a French sound mixed mm-hmm. with the hot jazz,
like a Django
of the
Reinhardt 20s. Type of thing.
Yeah, but they've got nine pieces. So there's a rhythm section and mm-hmm. there's a horn section
okay.
with this group too. And one thing that's important to note, because some of these folks you just don't know off the top of your head, mm-hmm. that all videos of all of our performers are on our website,
mm.
so you can kind of really get a feel for, is this show for me? And you can get a, you can check them out.
And you have a very easy website to find.
Thecabaret.org.
There you go.
Yeah.
Cool. So, hot sardines.
Yeah.
That
They're very
fun.
Hip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Count me in for that one.
Yeah.
Okay. What else you got?
Then, in February 20th and 21st, we have Broadway star Mandy Gonzalez. And you may not know her by her name, but she starred in Wicked and In the Heights on
okay.
Broadway, both of those. She's a powerhouse voice and a powerhouse Broadway star. And her show sold out at 54 Below in New York, Cabaret. And BroadwayWorld.com called her show one of the best cabarets they've ever seen.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great.
So she's sort of an up-and-coming Broadway star. Well, not really. I mean,
no, well, she'll be doing
shows,
more like Broadway songs? Or...
Yeah. Her show is called Love Always. Of course, it's in February, so that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But she'll be doing some love songs mixed with some of her Broadway career.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, but hers is sort of, you know, it's a contemporary look at it. So things like Total Eclipse of the Heart,
mm-hmm.
mixed with Elvis, Liza, Lennon, Aretha, Tina, and more.
Fun.
And of course, Defying Gravity. So
very cool.
Yeah. So she is in February.
Mm-hmm.
And, in March, we're bringing back Tony Desserre.
Tony Desserre.
Yes. Tony Desserre is, some folks may have seen him with the Symphony Orchestra. He has played with them. He has been likened to Frank Sinatra, kind of this Frank Sinatra of our time.
Real crooner.
Yeah. He's a crooner, but he's also a singer-songwriter. And his show is called Nightlife. And it's a show, a postmodern version of New York nightclub shows of the 1950s.
Mm.
So it's hip and cool, and it takes
in again swanky and cocktails.
Yeah,
and,
he says all you need is a martini and a swingin' medley, and that's kind of what his show is. A really great show. April 17, we have a show called The New Generation, which is up and coming performers,
okay.
and so that'll feature some local performers and performers from our educational programs, especially with our partnership with Ball State University.
Yeah, that's right. Because I mean, not just do you guys produce these great performances, but you do have education programs
mm-hmm.
for younger singers within the region who come and do masterclasses and workshops.
Right.
And,
a lot of our national stars that come do a masterclass on Saturdays,
mm-hmm.
so aspiring performers can do, you know, one-on-one. Coaching and performance techniques with someone who's extremely accomplished in their field, be it a Broadway star or a jazz star.
Yeah.
And Ball State University's...
Well, they've got a great musical theater program.
They do. Mm-hmm. And their theater program, which is great because not a lot of music schools do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've added two cabaret courses to their curriculum, and the students absolutely love it. And this is sort of a culmination of a partnership of a lot of work that we do with them. And that's in April. And then April 24th, we have crazy and quirky Nellie Mackay. And you really need to get on the website to see her work. She's been in, she was in Three Penny Opera with Alan Cumming and Cyndi Lauper.
Which was just on Broadway.
Yeah, but she's a singer-songwriter. She also plays the ukulele.
Mm-hmm.
She's extremely comedic and has political commentary that she also puts in her show. Her music's been featured on numerous TV shows, including shows like Weeds.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but she's quirky. Her first show sold out already, so we added a 9:30 performance to her evening.
Nice.
Yeah, so she's kind of hard to put in any kind of a category except cabaret.
That's a great lineup for the spring.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
And and we go, our first lineup, which you can find on the website, goes through June.
Okay.
So folks can see all the rest of the folks we got coming after that.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Hey, so let me ask you this. What's an appropriate thing to wear to the cabaret?
Well, that's a good question. So we want folks to feel comfortable in whatever they want, anywhere from business casual to cocktail attire.
Mm-hmm.
It is appropriate. Some folks like to really swank it up, and some folks like to be more downtown casual, and both of those are appropriate.
Okay, very good, very good. And again, people can come to the cabaret and just get drinks, or if they want to come early, they can make reservations and get dinner as well, right?
Absolutely, dinner and appetizers, and our doors open 2 hours before showtime, so you can have dinner or appetizers and drinks, and then beverages are served throughout the show.
Nice. Now Shannon, I got to ask you, whenever I see you, I want to know, when are you singing next? What are you up to these days?
Oh, you're so sweet.
I mean, not only do you run the cabaret, but you're a pretty fantastic singer yourself.
Well, you are very nice. I am probably going to have a show ready in the second half of the season.
Okay.
The cabaret has been growing so quickly and so fast and so much more quickly than we thought that I've been spending a lot of time just running that. So,
sure.
And I can't put on a show that's not up to our own quality because, you know, that would just be embarrassing for me. So I'm working on one for hopefully the second half of the season.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to that as well. Excellent.
Thank you.
Well, Shannon Forsell, always great to see you. Great way to kick off the new year by having you here on Art of the Matter. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much. Happy New Year.
Travis DiNicola with Shannon Forsell of the Cabaret at the Columbia Club. You can get their complete schedule and tickets at thecabaret.org, thecabaret.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I'll take my first of two looks at the Winter Magic Festival. Who says you can't repeat a trick?
I'll get a preview of This Story of My Life in production at Footlight Musicals.
And I'll chat with Jane Fortune about her new book, which brings to light the women artists who helped Florence after its historic flood in the 60s. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.